When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Enjoy this cool and short listicle provided by Dr. Arthur Vosloo from his book, Magic and Mysticism, based on philosopher Hans Jonas's existentialist depiction of Gnosticism. Here it is. 1. A hostile cosmos, Gnostic antipathy to nature. 2. A demiurge, or ignorant creator responsible for botched creation and hostile to human spiritual awakening. 3. Dualism, opposition between the realm of light and the realm of matter. 4. An elaborate mythology. 5. Myths concerning Sophia, wisdom, and her fall and restoration. 6. Belief in a hidden god, not the demiurge. 7. Difficulty of spiritual progress due to the archons or other hostile powers in the cosmos. Ignorance of the inherent fallen human condition. 8. Existence of the Ogdoad, or 8 spheres, including 7 planetary spheres, and possibility of their transcendence. 9. The necessity of gnosis, or direct spiritual knowledge from the realm of light. 10. A revealer or redeemer figure to show the way to the realm of light.
Valentinus believed the world we live in was created by a cruel god, and slightly stupid. A god that will send you plagues, or require sacrifices, or destroy Babylon.
He wasn't wrong about that. The bastard had a mean temper.
Humans can escape this world and return to the real one, the kingdom. And for that, you needed to achieve the Gnosis, which could be described as true knowledge.
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. Welcome to Aeon Byte. On this day after Easter, Christ has risen. Almost as much as inflation, but he has risen. And it is April. Yeah, it is April 1st. So it's April Fools. As they say, the one day where people use critical reasoning, but that's not the case. As all three of us were talking before the show, it should be April. The whole year should be April Fools because critical reasoning has gone out the door and the world has become quite a joke as who was the poet? America's poet. Robert Frost once said in a very Gnostic way, "Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I will forgive thy great big one on me." This is where we are in the realm of the demiurge, but it's all good because Gnosis is there. And I guess the other thing I should mention too, I was talking with Sid, it's April 1st. And this is, I have actually completed 12 years clean and sober from my last time around. So if I can do it, you can if you are struggling with addiction or other issues. And we will discuss it in this interview because Sid's work does talk about these powers of the demiurge, addiction, materialism, all that are sort of an inverse of the lights of the Pleroma. So if I can do it, you can. And if you need help, always feel free to contact me. Hang on until the miracle happens. And there is something about the grace of the divine. And it'll hit you when you least expect it. So, and It's great, as always, to have Dr. Sid Rupp. She will be discussing her new book, A Simple Explanation of the Gnostic Gospels, The Tripart Tractate. Good book, and again, good scholarship and a lot of great alternative science, psychology, and inspirational material to get you through this joke that is the world. Sid, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Miguel. Nice to be here.
Always glad to have you. And with us, too, we've got the Moondog Vance, who I don't know if he started a joke and started the whole world crying, as the Bee Gees sang. But Vance, how are you?
I'm okay. Always can use a refresher on the Gnostic Gospels, tripartite tractate in particular. So I am, of course, looking forward to this.
Thanks.
Indeed. And yes, I think the genius of Sid is that, yes, she really does make it simple. Sometimes we read the Nag Hammadi Library and we're reading Secret Book of John and we're reading the On the Origins of the World. We might read Irenaeus's account of the Fall of Sophia, and it's like, it's so Byzantine and labyrinth. And Sid, your work has been great because, again, you simplify it, but the value increases.
Exactly. It's not dumbing it down. It's simplifying to its essence. You know, the most profound truths are the simplest.
Yeah, indeed. Even me getting sober, sometimes it's those simple fridge magnet sayings that get me through the day. You know what I mean? So, you know, one day at a time and stuff like that. That's what gets me, keeps me going and wakes me up. So for the audience, bumper, whatever you want to call them, memes, but we'll discuss memes too. For the audience, good to see everybody there. We've got a Grand Pong. Again, if you say something offensive, suspend yourself since you're a mod. Stony Curtis, 7 years for you. Congratulations. Great accomplishment. Wiz, 5 years off the sauce. Congratulations. That's amazing. I'm so happy to hear. And for everybody else. But if you have questions later on for Sid or comments, please super chat them so we can separate them and get to your issue and inquiries. Other than that, for housekeeping, later this week, David Block will join us on Friday for the second installment of his new trilogy. His last one was incredibly popular and insightful, so hope to see you there. And a lot of great shows coming in April, including shows on Welsh magic, AI, and other great topics. So, let's get to you, Sid. Tell us about, why did you decide to write this book? Again, you were with us years ago to talk about the Gnostic Gospel Illuminated.
Right.
You wrote A Simple Explanation of Absolutely Everything, and it's been a couple of years since you presented at the Astrognosis Conference. So tell us, how did this come about?
What it is, as you mentioned, 20 years ago now, I wrote A Simple Explanation of Absolutely Everything, and it is a theory of everything. And then 10 years ago now, I wrote the Gnostic Gospel of the Tripartite Tractate, basically. And this is a very short book. It's only 50 pages long, and it is the pure distilled Tripartite Tractate out of the Nag Hammadi, which is a very labyrinthian Byzantine book, very hard for people to understand. So I just simplified, and just presented it as a little gospel, kind of like a Tao Te Ching kind of verses. And then people would say, okay, that's cool, but why? What? Why? Explain. And so the new book is just an explanation of that 50-page book, basically. And it's almost 300 pages, which just goes to show you it takes a lot more verbiage to explain something than to present it. So if you just want to go straight to the Gnostic Gospel, it's still in the Gnostic Gospel Illuminated. But if you want to know the whys and wherefores and the applications, then that's what the new book is all about. Plus, I actually found a Christian publisher willing to publish it. So it has a Christian imprimatur on the back, which means it's going to be in Christian bookstores. Oh. And I think that's a huge step forward.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, there should be some more dialogue. I mean, that's the whole idea. Speaking of the world gone crazy, nobody using critical thinking. The main idea, which I love, and the main example is the Pleroma in the fall, is what you call a simple golden rule.
Yeah.
And that could save humanity today if we implemented it, just like it saved when creation fell. That's what worked. But maybe tell the audience about that, because it's like a central theme.
And it's a central theme in my first book 20 years ago, in The Simple Explanation. I noticed that everything in the universe goes together exactly the same way, whether we're talking about people and societies, or whether we're talking about molecules or whether and minerals. It's this: units of consciousness, and you know, consciousness is the ground state of reality. So the Father above is consciousness itself. When people talk about the One, that is the ground state of consciousness, okay? So smaller parts of that consciousness are units of consciousness, I call them. Everything in the universe goes together by smaller units of consciousness at the same level. So if it's atoms hooking up with atoms, or people hooking up with other people, or the cells in your body hooking up with other cells to make your body, the golden rule is this: each one reaches out to others of its own kind with love, with information, and with assistance. And together, they focus on a project that's in the middle. So it's not, the focus goes off of any one person. It's not a hierarchical scheme. It's a centrally focused scheme. And it builds up to the next level. So, you know, atoms reach out to other atoms and make molecules. Molecules reach out to other molecules, make minerals. Minerals reach out to other minerals, make elements. Elements make minerals. And the cells of our bodies reach out to each other, and all the skin cells make skin, and the heart cells make heart, and all those units of organs reach out to each other and make our body. And it works on a psychological level, and it works on a societal level. It works on a, just think about the solar system. It's the planets reaching out around the central project of the sun at the middle and making a solar system. And then it's the same exact thing at the galaxy level. So throughout our universe, from the smallest to the largest, little things reach out to others of their own kind, to their neighbors, holding hands, building up, to make the next level up. And nobody out here on the lower level can make a skin cell can't suddenly be all of your skin. That doesn't work. So it's like that. That's the golden rule. And it works with people too. So the way it would help society is it as a model of cooperation, that we like a family unit. Those are the little units of consciousness of the kids and the mom and dad reaching out to form a family. And the family is one level up from the individuals that make it up. And it keeps going exactly. Like that.
Corporation. Yeah. And of course, the idea of fractals is very important,
right,
both to help people and also to understand how the divine emanates in the aeons. And of course,
right.
You have your idea in your book about, you have a video on YouTube about the broccoli stalk.
Right.
The little broccoli is still the big broccoli. Well, tell the audience more about the idea of fractals and broccoli.
Okay. So fractals are a mathematical concept that wasn't even noticed. I mean, it's always been here, but it wasn't even noticed until around, 1970 or so. That's an amazingly late date to notice a basic truth of the mathematical universe. And if you take what a fractal is, it's that, and we used to call it for a while, we called it holographic. You know, remember the holographic universe where with a hologram, you've got the larger image, but if you break it out, you can get that whole larger image in a smaller place. Well, that's the same thing for fractals. So the fractal broccoli is this. If you take a stalk of broccoli from the supermarket or from your plant outside, you peel it off, you've got this one big stalk of broccoli. And I'm sure everybody has noticed that you can take a little stalk off of the bigger stalk. And literally, it actually, if you look at it, it looks just like the mother stalk because everybody's slightly different. So the smaller stalk looks just like the bigger stalk, only it's smaller, but it's the same mathematical formula that represents the shape of that mother stalk. And then you can take that smaller stalk and you can break off a smaller stalk. And it's exactly the same as those two larger ones. And I have, on YouTube, you can go and look at my broccoli fractal demonstration. That's a hard thing to say. And I've taken it down to 7 iterations, they're called. 7 times smaller, you can take a stalk of broccoli at least, and it might even go smaller than that. And they're all the same. They're all the same mathematical thing. And that smallest piece of that broccoli is still that mother broccoli fully represented in the smallest piece. And so in a spiritual sense, we are fractals of what in Gnosticism is called the pleroma, or the fullness of God. And that is not, that didn't make its way into the Bible. It's in the Bible, but they've misrepresented what it means. Okay. Right. So there is an entity, there's a place called the fullness of God. And it is hierarchical. It's basically shaped like a pyramid, interestingly enough, because hierarchical means that the higher, the fewer. And you can see when you're looking at the pyramid, the higher up you go, the fewer blocks or bricks there are in that level. But so with the pleroma, the entire fullness of God is represented in it. All things that can ever be, that will ever possibly be, are represented in this hierarchical thing called the pleroma, or the fullness. And according to Gnosticism, we are their children. They are the first order of powers created by the Father and the Son. Then came the pleroma. That's the breakout of the Father and the Son, all their pieces, all their fractals, kind of. We are their children. We are called the second order of powers. And we are just like, we could be walking pyramids walking around. So we are just like the fullness of God, but contained or represented in our body. Oh, there you go. There you have it. A
little visual help.
The dark background field is the Father. And it is the illimitable, infinite ground state of consciousness. It is consciousness itself without a particular thought. So, it's omniscience, but what is there to know? It's omnipresence, but where is there to go? It's omnipotence, but what do you apply it to? So the Father had a thought, and that thought is that first thing you see there. That's that little white cloud up in the upper left. And that is the Son. That is literally the Son of God. If you want to know what the Son of God looks like that, at least in my diagrams. And then the Son of God being a fractal of the Father, and he's a monad. The Father is not a monad. He's illimitable. He has no boundaries, but the Son has a boundary. He's like the bucket dipped into the sea of consciousness, and he is a fractal of the Father. Everything that the Father knows and contains is inside of the Son. And then the Son, because he's a fractal of the Father, he also is creative, and he also became a father immediately. And just to the right and lower down, that is called the All, or the totalities of the All, is what it's referred to in various Gnostic books, certainly in the tripartite tractate. It's the totalities of the All. And actually, to be more specific, that All starburst could be sitting right on top of the Son, because they are coexistent. It is really the parts of the Son. But I had to move it over in order to show that it was a starburst looking thing. And then they immediately, and that's an infinite, because God is infinite. So that is an infinite starburst of variations of the Son. And they became self-aware by giving glory to the Son and the Father. Their whole job, the job of the totalities of the All, is nothing but giving glory to the Father. That's what they do. Their Father is the Son. So that's somewhat complicated and confusing, because throughout Gnostic Gospels, you see people talking about the father, but are they talking about the illimitable unconsciousness in the background, or are they talking about the son? Usually they're talking about the son. But anyway, then they migrated to the right and became that triangular, that pyramidal shape that you see there. And that is the fullness of God. That is literally the fractals of the all of the Son of God in a hierarchical shape. So there's more of them down at the bottom and there's fewer of them at the top. And I think that the lower versions, the lower levels of the fullness of God are things like math and music and the way chemistry goes together and the way atoms go together. Those are kind of physical laws and whatnot. They're little guys. They're little guys. They have very small spheres of influence. But then the higher, the more they hold hands and level up according to the golden rule, because the fullness, the pleroma completely works upon the golden rule. They reach out to their neighbors with love, assistance to level up to the next level, and they go higher and higher and higher. And probably as you get up higher, that's where you get way up near the top is where you get things like angels and personalities and Jungian archetypes all live in the pleroma. They're all there. And then way at the very top, you'll see a small pyramid. The capstone sitting at the top is, there we go, the little guy. You see, he's a total fractal of the pleroma below him. And in the tripartite tractate of the Nag Hammadi, which is the particular book that I explain, his name is Logos. I know in that clip you showed before at the beginning of the show, the most Gnostics think of that as Sophia, as a female character. Mm. I don't like that. Logos, well, I personally think that there's no sex in the pleroma, in my opinion. I think they are genderless, although they may have representations like Jungian archetypes, you know, like the lovers and so forth. But literally, the way eons have sex is by giving glory in various combinations to the son and the father upstream, and those combinations produce another level up. So they become more and more complex, just like our bodies. You know, your body begins with atoms and molecules. It becomes living flesh at the level of the cells and the things that make up the cells, but they level up to larger and larger entities within your body. We are a fractal of the fullness. We are second order of powers based upon this very pattern that you're seeing right now. So it's the higher, the fewer. And I prefer Logos as a neutral, genderless character rather than once again blaming the fall on a female as the Bible does with Adam and Eve. And then what the eons do, they have a dream life, and that's the dream of paradise there on the right.
All right.
I know I'm kind of talking and I'm kind of dumping a lot of thoughts, but do you think we're following it?
Yeah. People in the chat room are definitely getting it. Let's say that we have the simple
golden
rule.
There's the golden rule.
Is this also work too better?
Well, this is the simple explanations version from before. See, I came up with this theory of everything that's represented here, you know, 10 years before I ever read the Nag Hammadi. So this came out of my own little brain. This was direct revelation, you might say. All I was going on was this. For a number of years, I contemplated mud up, spirit down. That's what we know. We know we're mud from the levels up. That's our molecular levels. And we're spirit from God down, because obviously we're spirit. Well, how do they go together? What is the mechanics of mud up, spirit down? And this popped out. I actually sat down to write a different book, and this popped out instead. And it was written, and when I say it was written in 4 days, I'm talking about this book. This original simple explanation came all the way out in 4 days with all of the diagrams and everything. So this is a toroidal universe.
Right.
And that is a torus. And the sun is right. The sun is the outside encapsulating our torus. It pours down consciousness from the top down. And that we could call is the fall of Logos, or the fall of the eon out of the ethereal plane to create our material universe. And here and now is at the very center. And once it hits the here and now spot, that is when change, can you hear my cat meowing? That's when change, time, and space are ballooning outward because there was no material universe. It took the fall of that fractal eon that was carrying all of the information of paradise that the eons were dreaming of. It carried it into the fall and broke open and created our ballooning universe of consciousness. So we have individated consciousness. We have change, time, and space. Now we're jumping into the demiurge, but that's another discussion. Uh-huh. Let's not get there yet.
All right, okay. Let's not get to the, yeah, let's stay on the plot.
Yeah, here we are. We're on the plot. But anyway, so time and space comes down through the middle, and then I have other diagrams. And this is in other religions, this is God the Creator, Shakti, the mother of 10,000 things. It's certainly not particularly Christian or biblical. It's not the Hebraic. But then again, it's not Egyptian or Phoenician either. So that's what came out of my little brain. Okay, so we can go past that.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, if you don't mind me saying, the idea of the fall, obviously, it's the characters. Yeah, in the Nag Hammadi library, you hear about Sophia, but they were just basing themselves of the mythology of the time, you know, the Shekinah, right. Kai Bel, Ashira. There is all these myths of women coming down from heaven, either fallen or meteorite. So they simply added Sophia because I was in the Corpus Hermeticum. It's a little bit similar because you've got in Poimandris, you've got, yes, there's the All Father. Then you've got the Logos, then the Demiurge, who's positive. Those two sort of, the Demiurge shapes the chaos.
Right.
The Logos infuses it with meaning. And then there's the Sun, which is pure beauty, the beauty of creation. But it's the Sun who falls, is seduced by nature, and they mix up. So for Hermeticism, it's not the Logos, it's the Sun who falls. So they
that seems theologically impossible to me because the Son is the encapsulation of the Father and the Father is immutable. The Father cannot change. So the Father is not, when people think that the Father doesn't pay attention to them or doesn't care about them or doesn't love them, that's not true. He does, but he's way out there. We can't touch him. We can't see him. He has no countenance that we can relate to. So the Father has a face, and that's the Son. That's his presenting part. And so the Son is plugged into us, but he's also plugged into the Father. So I don't see how he can be fallen. So that's why we take another character and we make it fall.
What's the difference between for those who might want to know, between in the tripart tractate between the Son and the Logos? Because people are still thinking biblical. We still think Jesus is both the Son and the Logos.
Right. And that was a heresy I had to personally overcome because my background is evangelical Christianity. I'm born again. I'm baptized in the Holy Spirit. I'm baptized in the river. So, I was a very strong Christian and a Bible scholar. I've got a master's degree from Azusa Pacific, which is a theological seminary. So I know the Bible. And that was a huge thing to think of the Son as fallen. So and that is why I actually put down the tripartite tractate. I put down the Nag Hammadi for 5 whole years before I picked it up again. And as soon as I picked it up, boom, out comes the Gnostic Gospel Illuminated. It was boom, boom, boom. I wasn't working on it. I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't sweating over it. I was letting it cook, percolate in my brain all that time. So go to another slide and we'll see the difference between Logos and the Sun. Logos is that top part of the Logos is a fractal. Okay, let me put it this way. The Sun comes from the Father. The hierarchy of the fullness of God is a version of the Sun that is hierarchical. The Sun is not hierarchical. It's a blob. That's why it looks like a cloud in the drawing. The hierarchy comes when its individuated parts become self-aware. And the way they become self-aware is by giving glory and then giving glory in various combinations until you've got like a logarithmic infinite expansion of consciousness. That is different than the Son, who remains the full encapsulation of the Father, because he's got to be able to, he's plugged into the Father. He didn't go anywhere. Oh, and in fact, it specifies that in the tripartite tractate. The Son is emanated from the Father, but it's like an extension of the Father. It's very much like the slime mold.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I was like, she's comparing the Pleroma to slime mold.
Yes, it's like a slime mold. Because when the slime mold extrudes itself, yet is still connected to its mother, it's not individuated. It only knows the consciousness of the mother. The slime mold doesn't become individuated until it's puffballed off and gets carried away by the wind. Then it's its own fractal of the mother, and it grows exactly DNA replica. It's an exact replica of the mother from which it came. So Logos is like an exact replica of the Son, but he is not the Son, because the Son is the extrusion of the Father that remains within the Father's grasp. It sounds so silly when you talk this all out loud, because it just seems kind of silly, but...
Yeah, but it's scientific. It's nature. It's us. I'm a fractal of my ancestors. You're a fractal of your ancestors. We're fractals. So I have the Pleroma, but also the Aeons also have their own unique.
Right,
ego.
They have their own consciousness. Their egos. Right. See, when you become, and what the ego of the fullness is. Go back to that picture of the fullness and Logos, if you can, please.
Sure.
There we go.
Oh, sorry.
There. Yeah.
This one?
No. The pyramid. There.
Okay.
Each of those. So now imagine that that's a slime mold sitting there, right? In a pyramidal shape. Okay. So each of those corpuscles is a unit of consciousness that replicates the Son of God. Yet it has its own self-identity because of where it's placed. It says in the tripartite tractate that every aeon, once it became self-aware, because the totalities of the all is not self-aware. And the Son, he's part of the Father. He's self-aware, but not quite. He's the Father. Mm-hmm. But these guys are self-aware in the way that we're self-aware. And so, therefore, in psychology, we call that an ego. That's your individual position, name, place, job, personality, the way you plug into your neighbors. That is your ego. It's not what we usually down here call ego, which is, that's mine. I want that. You get out of here. Go die. It's mine. No, that's your ego out of control. That's your bad ego. But your ego, if you learn to live within your true self, and yourself is the full Pleroma of God. That triangle there, that is the one self. And we all carry that, not only in our walking around self, like Sid, I have that inside of me, what I used to call meat mountain, because I'm meat. So I got the meat mountain inside of me, which is a replica of my parents, which are the fullness of God. And it's not just two parents, it's whatever tremendous combination of eons make me up. And there's tons of eons that make me up, even on your personality level. You've got, you know, your various talents are each represented. You know, there's a singer and there's an actor and there's a writer and there's a mom and there's a lover. These are all subselves, what Jung called archetypes, that we carry within the constellation of our personality. And the ego is the definition of how I relate to my neighbors. It's the part of me that reaches out to hold hands to build the next level up. But if my ego, in our modern culture, our egos are being encouraged to run the show. Our egos have dethroned God or dethroned the fullness of God from the center of ourselves. So it's me. That isn't what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be the one self of God sharing love and assistance to our neighbors to help us level up. And on the community or family level, that's to have good communities. That's to have good neighbors. That's to help each other when we need help. It's not to see how much junk I can accumulate and how much money I can spend on myself. And I deserve this and I deserve that. I deserve that machine and I deserve these clothes and I deserve it. We don't deserve anything. We don't deserve anything, I'll say. I'm thinking swear words in my mind, but I'm trying to keep it clean.
Be grateful for what you have. Gratitude.
gratitude, love. And our job, as it turns out, our job, what is the purpose? Whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, what is your purpose here on earth? What is the purpose of being alive? People often ask themselves that, even people who have gnosis or who love Christ. What's their job, though? Mm-hmm. Well, I figured it out finally, and it's helping me to be a better person because characteristically, I'm a warrior. I'm very combative, and because I have a warrior archetype in me, I keep telling my brother, get off my back, I'm a warrior. But it's our job is to spread love, is to remind the demiurge, is to remind the fallen ones that we come from above and that there's a thing called love and that the Father loves us and that home is up there. Home is not inside of my house with all this accumulated materialist crap we own. It's up above. And so our job is to spread love. It's not to get in fights. I get in random fights with people. I used to get in random fights with a lot more people than I do now. Oh, and during the pandemic, I was like insane. Oh my God.
We were all warriors.
I'd run at people who were out in the woods all by themselves wearing a mask. What are you wearing a mask for? I'd yell at them. But now I realize that, no, that's not the way to win souls and share God. The way to win souls is to love people, is to show them compassion and acceptance wherever they are. And, you know, channel the love of God through me to them. That's the rest of my life task is to do that.
Oh, I agreed 100%. I mean, it's so simple. I mean, all sides were like, what would Jesus do? Well, Jesus used to hang out with prostitutes and taxpayers. We should be able to hang out with the people we dislike the most and see what they're about. And also, I love how you write how gnosis is very much a remembrance. It's remembering the world above. And quote, you say, the key to gnosis is, quote, does not lie among the vices. We can only be truly joyful when we act out of love. So I like that a lot.
Right. Right. The tripartite tractate says the key to gnosis, there's only one thing you really have to know. We really don't have to memorize all these books or the names of angels or how to do alchemy or astrology. We don't really need to do that. All we need to do is remember the Father. Is remember that we are not the be-all and end-all. Life didn't begin when I was born. Life existed before me, and that's the Father, and consciousness is just coming through me. Life and consciousness come from above, and that's what the tripartite tractate says. Our job, our gnosis, is to remember the Father and to remember that we come from the fullness of God, and we will return to the fullness of God, period, period. So, and I personally, since I come from a Christian background, I have a hard time selling that to Christians because they want to believe that you have to go forward and you have to profess Jesus and you have to be prayed on and baptized. And then if you're good, some churches say, you'll go to heaven. Most everybody goes to hell in their view. And that is not the nature of a loving God. God is not going to let everyone go to hell, particularly since, by the way, we didn't cause the fall. Adam didn't make the fall. Eve didn't come from fall. That's beyond our pay grade. That happened up above. And we were sent down to remind the fall, well, look, we're coming from above and we love you. Come on home. Come on home. But instead of doing that, we just got into fights and we decided to start becoming kings and queens and accumulate material wealth. And we forgot ourselves.
Amen. Amen. Vance, any questions or remarks from you before we get into the fall and how our friend the Demiurge came about?
Well, you want a super chat? We got one.
Let's wait a little bit for that one because it's kind of a broad one.
Okay. Let's see. For me, no questions so far. Just
And this makes sense, right? Everything makes sense.
Are you nodding your head though, Vance? Is it thumbs up? All right.
You got the slime.
Yeah, so far.
All right.
Yeah, thoughts are running through my head. Like the one, I think there's one consciousness. There aren't many, many different little consciousnesses. Even that's an illusion. So every one of us is actually the totality experiencing itself. That's the way I think of it.
Well, we can say that in the fractal manner. You know, we're all totalities. We're all the one true self.
Yeah.
But obviously we're different. We're walking around with these ego envelopes, for example, and these material bodies. Ego envelope. That's a new. That's
I love it. Yeah. Works too in the, yeah, it works too in the holographic model works too. So we're all saying the same thing. Just
or it's a dream. We're all dreaming that there are other little bodies around there.
That could be true. That because that's yeah. what the fullnesses do. They just sit up there and dream. They sit. They don't go around doing stuff. It's not a holodeck up there. They're just dreaming.
But if they sit, they have butts.
No, they're little round corpuscles, remember. They're spores. They're spores.
They got to float in the pleroma.
Yes, yes, that's it. All right.
Enough out of me.
Go ahead, Miguel. Take it away.
All right, let's go back to our favorite villain, the Dem, and the Fall. Let's find out. There is a Fall in the Tripart Tractate.
Yes.
As it is mentioned, it has to do with the Logos, unlike others, that it's the Sun and Sophia, and this, or Satan, this is the Logos, man. What happened with the Logos?
Well, see, Logos was sitting up there at the top, and this is a little realization I had a couple of years ago. By the way, working on one book of the Nag Hammadi for 10 solid years, and 15, if you count the 5 that were laying fallow, my gnosis is deepening. It's not changing. I haven't gotten, that was wrong what I thought before. No, it's just getting deeper and deeper and more realized, more full. I understand things better. So Logos was sitting up there at the top, and this was the little satori I had about it. You know, it's a hierarchy, and he's sitting up there as a miniature hierarchy sitting on top of the hierarchy. He had no neighbors. He was up there by himself. He didn't have the golden rule neighbors to reach out to. He had nobody on his right and left, and nobody was above him except the Father. Mm. So therefore, he had made the mistake, let's say, of thinking that he could plug back up into the Sun, because that's the only thing there was. He didn't see anybody around him, and he didn't look down. He thought that the Sun and the Father was accessible, and he reached upward in praise. So it was out of the best of intentions. He did not try to become a god. He tried to be one again, in Vance's way of thinking, with the Father once again. He was ready to go back home, and he was unable to do that. He was not authorized, so to speak, because the fullness of God works as a solid unit. It's a singularity, and he was not supposed to plug back in God. And therefore, instead of going up, he went down, and he fell off of the top of that pyramid, and he broke apart into a different dimension. And that is this dimension then that you saw in the previous picture of the Taurus and the expansion of time, space, and this apparent universe. I'm willing to say apparent universe that we live in. And it says in the Tripartite Tractate, Logos broke apart. And he was horrified, horrified is the word it uses, by what had happened. And the best part of Logos immediately abandoned the Fall. He repented immediately and fled back up. He repented and fled back up to the fullness. But it was the best part of Logos that fled back up. So that would be his one self fractal, not his ego that had gotten out of control. And the reason why we're also out of control with our egos is because we're half Logos and half Demiurge. The part that stayed below is called the Demiurge. And that is the ignorant God. That is the amnesiac God that doesn't know. Okay, he broke apart. Logos fled and abandoned him down below. And Demiurge wakes up. And it's like, what the hell? Where am I? What? And there was no one and nothing before him. Yet he carried all of those patterns, all of the blueprints of the fullness from Logos. Right. So he was able to build. So he is very much like Jehovah. He's very, I don't know if he's exactly Jehovah. I tend to think he is of the Old Testament, that he's the Yahweh God that woke up and said, let there be light. Let there be oceans. Let there be land. And now I shall make this. And now I shall make that.
There is no God but me. I am a
jealous. There is no God but me. Thou shalt have no other God before me. But there are gods before him. And we Gnostics call that the God above all gods. Mm-hmm. And the sun and the pleroma of the fullness. But Jehovah or the Demiurge says there is no God before me. And but this is interesting because even in Genesis, even in the Old Testament of the Bible, the Demiurge was not able to breathe life into those. He tried to make, he wanted to bring the life alive. So he was able, so I, the way I interpret that, the Demiurge is the architect of the material universe all the way up, even in the golden rule holding hands kind of way of doing things, because that's how particles and molecules and elements and aggregates of minerals and even solar systems and galaxies, that's how they all go together in that exact same pattern that I'm talking about. But gosh darn it, when he tried to make life, there's Adam. He made him out of mud lying on the riverbank because he's the god of mud. And he couldn't get it to come to life. He couldn't get it to come to life. It was just lying there. It was a golem, I guess we'd call it. Uh-huh. And then the second order of it powers, they're feeling very sorry for, they, you see, Logos knows he abandoned them. And the fullness of God, the second order of powers, will not be complete until the Demiurge comes back home. So a piece of them is missing. And that is the ego so the, of Logos.
Hold on 1 second. So the yes. second order is the sparks of the Logos that he leaves behind.
No, the second order is the eon sitting in the pleroma. No, the second order is the sparks. Yeah. The first yeah, okay. order, yeah, I'm sorry. The first order is the blobs in the pleroma, the eons.
Right, right.
We human beings are the living creatures that bring life into the universe. We are the second order of powers because we are the children of the first order of the powers. So we're the second generation of ethereal powers. And we come to Earth to give the life and love and remembrance of the Father to that otherwise dead material creation.
So we were and sent. So
we were fall. Sent.
It wasn't an accident like in the secret book of John.
Right. Okay. It's not okay. an accident. We're birthed. We're the, you know, think of it again as the pleroma, the slime mold model. We right. are the little slime mold buds coming down in here. And we and so whenever an embryo is in impregnated, you know, when an egg is impregnated by a sperm and makes an embryo, that is the second order of life, of power, a fractal of the fullness of God coming into that. And that's what brings the life. And then it starts replicating upward from there. So it's the mud is down below. And then we are a layer of life, remembrance, love, reason, sitting on top of the mud. There you go. So the province of the Demiurge is still a hierarchical shape because he brought that down with him. And he took the quantum chaos of the fall and built it up. But it's called the deficiency. There's no golden rule. There's no love. There's no worship of the Father. There's no kindness. There's no compassion. There's no virtue. Okay, now show the next one that shows meat. That's the mud.
Meat.
Past that. One more. Isn't there a simpler one or that one?
Okay.
So here's the baby. Here's the creatures, the living creatures, because there is a difference between rocks and daisies, between rocks and squirrels. There's a difference. And in the first theory of everything I had, the simple explanation of absolutely everything, there was a definite break between the mud and the spirit, but I couldn't quite you know, reconcile what the difference was. But that was the thing that the Gnosis brought me. That's the thing I learned from the tripartite tractate, that the difference is that the consciousness and the love is coming down from above. And it infuses with life the dead mud of the demiurge with the golden rule of the consciousness of the Father. So our consciousness is the spirit down part, and it forms the organisms, the organ systems, the organs, the cells, everything that's soft and squishy on any planet. That comes from the Father. Everything that's rock hard and dead and can't roll by itself, that is the demiurge. And the demiurge still doesn't realize that the Father is the one that breathes life, or Logos. It's actually through the mouth of Logos that breathes life into the, you know, the dead stuff to make us level up. But it's not the molecules leveling up, and it's not the demiurge.
Any questions? Okay, that makes sense. Yes. Okay. Also, it should be mentioned, yeah, the Logos falls. And this is a Valentinian idea, because in the Valentinian myths, as soon as Sophia falls, she's like, ugh, and she goes up, but she leaves behind Acamoth. Oh. So yeah. There's a higher Sophia. And so Acamoth is the wisdom of death. She creates the demiurge. And then it's a similar story. But
in
the Tripartite Tractate, you have the Logos at first tries to destroy the deficiency, like a kid hiding something he broke, like, oh, no, but he can't, so then he's got to sort of face up. He's got to
repent. Yeah, and he does it from up above, though. And he doesn't do it on his own. He goes back up to the fullness, and it's the fullness as a whole praying with Logos to the sun to rectify the fall. And that's what sends. That's what birthed us, the second order of creatures.
Right, right. And then Jesus, to drum roll, Jesus is basically, as you say, he's a healing algorithm, right? That's how you describe him. He's this code that's going to fix the rest of the code that's kind of off whack.
Yeah, we've gone all wonky because of the never-ending war. And so Jesus the Christ, well, the Christ is a slightly different, Jesus is a manifestation of the Christ. Mm-hmm. But the Christ is not the same as the Son of God. So this is where this diverges quite a bit from conventional Christianity. Right. The Christ is actually called the third order of powers. So the first order of powers is the fullnesses of the pleroma. We are the second order of powers down here. We mucked it up because of the never-ending war with the demiurge and with each other. All we want to do is fight. And I'm a good example of that. So another savior was required to bring the, no, here, guys, here's what it is. Listen. And that's Jesus. The Christ is called the third order of powers. And so Jesus, when they say he's fully man and fully God, that fully God part is yet another order of powers. It's not the pleroma. It's not us. It's the third order of powers, which is even a better. It's like, I say it's got all the mojo. It's got all the mojo now, because when we didn't work, this didn't work. This was the fullness's idea to send us down and bring the remembrance. It doesn't quite work, except for those few people who have gnosis, okay? But didn't work well enough. Everybody's got to get saved. Everybody's got to go back home before the demiurge says, hey, where'd everybody go? Huh? Ah! And then zoop, he gets sucked back up too. When he loses all, and the reason he hates us so much, he hates the meat because we don't obey him. And this is why the law in the Old Testament, God is all about rules and laws and chopping off people's heads and killing babies and, you know, massacres, and you come in and you carry the law. And even then the Hebrews didn't do a great job of carrying the law forward. So then he killed a whole bunch of them off. It's like, he just likes to kill off the meat that doesn't obey. And we will never obey. He hates us from the get-go because we do not believe he is God. We remember the Father. We carry the remembrance. That's part of the consciousness of God. We carry that consciousness down from the spirit. So the one true self is in all of us, and it's in every molecule, not every molecule, but every cell of our bodies. So are still mucking it up. So the third order of powers comes down. That's Jesus, fully God, fully man, fully third order of power in the form of human. And that's what the whole, you know, preaching and the healing and the laying on of hands and the death and resurrection and the ascension and bodily form, that all has to do with showing that this was some special guy, Jesus. But, and here's another heresy, if you have the actual gnosis that Jesus brought us, if you simply remember the Father and you love God, all you have to do is begin spreading love and love the Father. If you don't love God, and I tend to think that people who are extremely anti-Christian, I can understand not liking the church. That is a human organization that did a lot of historical wrong. But I say, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. The only reason it seems to me that a person rejects the notion of a savior or a Christ to show us love and help us go back home to the Father is their ego is in the way because they're still sitting on the throne. They think there is no other God but me. I'm not going to let Christ on the throne go away. That's ego. And it's always ego that gets in the way. It's ego that gets in the way. So you've got to let the third order powers come in. I think that's what the true baptism is of Christ. But he's not going to send everybody to hell. And there's another heresy, because even at that, sooner or later, everybody's going to get it. Everybody is going to get it, even the demiurge. But the more people that, you know, the interesting thing, the more people that are not, that have true gnosis, that get to stick the landing in heaven and don't have to come back on earth and try again, it kind of keeps making the souls that are left here on earth murky and murkier and darker and darker. It could explain the fall of culture because the good guys are staying, they're up above playing Mozart and having philosophical discussions. And, you know, they're doing all these kinds of things. That's my idea of heaven. They're doing all these. And down here, you just have ego, 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 nothing but ego. And that's not a good place to be. So when they die, have you, you know, these near-death experiences, I've been watching a lot of those on YouTube. Do you ever watch those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are very interesting. It implies that everyone has a shot at seeing the eon, seeing the Father, seeing the feeling the love of God every time they die. And they can stay or they can come back for whatever reason. Either they come back because they're going to spread more love and try to save the world, they're a bodhisattva, or they come back because, no, I deny you, I must come back. And then boom, next thing you know, you're a baby again.
Amen. Amen, indeed. Well, why don't we get to some super chats and then I've got questions.
And you can go to the, and also put up that slide that's the more complicated one now. The other triangle, that one, that can stay.
That one, okay.
Yeah, that's the most, that's full gnosis. There's your full gnosis right there.
All right. Okay. Vance, you want to get to the super chats?
Yeah, you want to tackle the big one first there, the first one from sure. South Africa. He contributed 70 ZARs. I didn't know what that was. That's South African currency.
Probably 5 cents.
No. I don't know. I was thinking the other way. Wow, that's $1 million. You know, each ZAR is worth, you know, $100,000. What are your thoughts on the forefather? Is there a difference between father and forefather? In AFT says he's heavily influenced by the text Sophia of Jesus Christ, though he's aware this is on the tripartite tractate.
Okay. Well, for one thing, I would like to point out that the word logos in Greek means wisdom and reason. Sophia means wisdom in Greek. So I think that these are interchangeable names. They just have slightly different mythologies surrounding them, which is what you were saying, I think, Miguel. Now, the forefather, I'm not familiar with that expression, but I would say, here's what it might be, if I were to guess. The father is the originating source, that black background before the sun arose, right? It is the illimitable, invisible. We will never see or touch the Father because he is too great. And it says in the tripartite tractate that if anyone were to behold the Father, he would be annihilated just because it's like trying to stand in front of a nuclear explosion. It's not going to work out. And that's what Logos tried to do. And so the Father repelled, or the forefather repelled logos in the opposite direction to save him, to preserve him. So it was a kindness that he did to logos to create the fall. Then out of that background of consciousness emerges, but staying connected, the sun. But the sun immediately became a father on his own. And a lot of times when people are talking about the Father, see, the Father of the fullness of God isn't the God above all gods. It's the Son who is called the Father because he is the Father of all of us emanated consciousnesses. The Father itself doesn't directly emanate consciousness. He's the background. He's the matrix. It's the Son that begins emanated consciousness, first through the totalities, then through the consciousness of the fullness, then through the second order powers, then through the third order of powers. These are all emanations from the Father, who is the Son of, from the forefather. I don't know if the forefather is the background or if it's the Son is the forefather. I don't know which, but one of them's downstream from the other. The Son is a father.
Now, this is all in the context of the tripartite tractate. Is that
correct? Yes, but I find, well, at least when reading other Valentinian type texts, they also talk about the Father. But you know what? The Father doesn't have a face. You can't talk to the Father. The Father, it is said, has no countenance. Even in the, what was that when I was reading this, the Gospel of Truth? The Father has no face. He's illimitable. He has no representation. He's like the air we breathe. The Son is the countenance or the face of his Father. We can only relate to the face. So whenever it talks about relating to the face of the Father or praying to the countenance of the Father, that's not the biggest guy. That's the Son who has become a Father, our Father.
Well, now the Son has, quote unquote, fallen a little bit because in the fact that he realizes that there's a Father, he is now separate from the Father in
but
the
he's
slightest
not.
Bit.
Well, not in the tripartite tractate, because he's still plugged in. He's just an extrusion. Is your finger separate from your chest? No, it's just further away.
Yeah. But still, then if you're thinking in terms of your finger, then you're not thinking in terms of your whole self.
Yeah. And the question?
Yeah. Well, the question is then if the Son is thinking of the Father, then he can't be totally in that moment one with the Father, totally one, because.
Well, the Son glorifies the Father. It was the Father and Son exchanged glories. They glorified each other. The Father glorified the Son. The Son glorifies the Father. And it's through glorification that apparent units of consciousness emerge. But it's always being plugged in through the glory. So like when you feel out of step with God, do you ever feel out of step with the Father, even though you realize it's all one? Okay. So I call that the glory beam, BEAM. You need to step into the glory beam. Once you remember the Father, once you step into the glory beam, suddenly you're at one again. There's nothing else that has to be gained because you're just stepping into the light. So the Son never steps out of the light. He's always in the glory beam. But he's also has these sub-selves coming out.
Yeah, but if he steps into a beam, then he's aware of a beam as separate from himself. And therefore, since the beam is part of the Father, then he's still separate from the Father. He has to lose himself totally in order to become one with the Father.
He would, but we don't. I think in Gnosticism, I don't know Gnosticism in general, but certainly in the Valentinian, you never lose your ego because even the eons have egos. But we just aren't overtaken by egoism. It just is our name. It's how we're going to recognize each other in the other realm.
Matter of degrees, I think.
Yeah. And recognition, yeah.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.